You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Salam everyone, this is Yusuf, and in this week's episode I will stay with an important chapter of our history when the Palestinian movement contributed to the formation of the Kingdom of Arab Syria from 1918 to July 1920. On this day of 1918, 107 years ago, Prince Faisal, the son of Hussein, the Hashemite, arrived to Damascus. Prince Faisal was one of the key leaders of the Grand Arab Revolt against the Ottoman Empire, a revolution that broke out in May 1916. The dust of World War I had not settled yet. The Hashemites came to Damascus with aspirations to rule the region, and with enough support and messages of loyalty and support of the people of the region. And in addition to this, he arrived to Damascus with a promise in his hand, a promise that those who won World War I will not oppose an Arab entity in the Levantine under the leadership of the Hashemites. They didn't know that Britain also had given two other promises that they kept secret. The first one in 1916, and it was a deal with France, the Russian Tsar, and Italy, also known as Sykes-Picot Agreement, to divide Arab land among them. And it remained a secret deal until the Russian Bolshevik Revolution, when the rebels removed the secrecy over this deal and exposed it. So Britain drew a line from the northern Iraqi city of Al-Mosul to the northern Palestinian port Haifa and said, everything to the south of this line is mine, and everything to the north of this line goes to France. Also, Italy gets to stay in Libya. And also, Britain gave a third promise in November 1917. This time, it was to the Zionists, promising them Palestine, a homeland for the Jews in Palestine, the infamous Balfour Declaration. And again, Balfour Declaration is not a declaration because it was kept secret. So the prince had not known when he arrived in October 18 that the region will go through turmoil and that the superpowers had plans for the land. On the other hand, the Arabs were thirsty and ready to be united behind a leader, and they saw the Hashemite dynasty as legitimate leaders, first because of their lineage to the Prophet and their social and religious and political status because of that, second because of their custodianship of the holy places in Hijaz, in Mecca and Medina, third because of the leadership to the Grand Arab Revolution. So the people, the majority of the people of Syria and Palestine and Jordan and even Lebanon and parts of Iraq pledged allegiance to Prince Faisal. He arrived to Damascus, to one of the central suburbs of Damascus downtown called Al-Marje. And his arrival was marked by festivity, songs, celebration, and dance. One of the songs was For Al-Marje, and it says, Zayinu Al-Marje, decorate Al-Marje. It's the same place that witnessed 2 years before that the execution of many Palestinian and Lebanese and Syrian and Iraqi Arab intellectuals at the hands of the Ottoman ruler Jamal Pasha. Let's have a listen. Signs of betrayal, British betrayal to the Hashemites and the Arabs, was the occupation of Jerusalem in December 17, and the subsequent occupation of Palestine that took place over 2018 with the help of the Anzacs. So the arrival of the prince to Damascus happened during the peak of the British occupation of Palestine, where they were nearly done, to the extent that some historians would argue that there was some sort of a race between Prince Faisal and General Allenby of Britain, where if he had not arrived to Damascus in October, Britain would have continued its expansion to include Syria. Now the Palestinians found themselves under another rule of foreign power. This time it's the Europeans, this time it's Britain. And nevertheless, they pledged allegiance to Prince Faisal, hoping that whether by diplomacy or by non-violence resistance or even military resistance, that we will be under Arab rule of Prince Faisal, and to embody their aspirations for independence, the Palestinians, the intellectuals and the leaders of the Palestinian movement supported the endeavors of Prince Faisal to set up a political body where the capital city is Damascus and it will include Palestine. So they had helped him to set up this political body across all of the following year, 1919, and the beginning of 1920, until the day has come, March the 8th, 1920, when a Palestinian from Nablus, Mohammed Darwaza, stood in the middle of Damascus and read the declaration and the birth of the Kingdom of Arab Syria. And in his declaration, in this declaration, a very clear message, very clear reference to Palestine was made, and very clear rejection of Balfour declaration was made. I quote, "The full and absolute independence of our country, Syria, including Palestine, within her natural boundaries, based on a civil representative form of government, protection of the rights of the minorities, and rejection of the claims of the Zionists to Palestine as a national homeland or place of immigration for the Jews." End of quote. The representatives from Palestine, Lebanon, Syria, and Jordan, and Iraq were racing with time, because they wanted to form a congress or a parliament and to get this parliament to talk to the world after World War One, especially that there was an American fact-finding mission or an inquiry that was called the King Crane Inquiry, that was sent from America to the region to gather evidence or information about what the locals of the region want. Do they want, like what Britain and France and Italy say, to be under the mandate of a more superior power, or do they want independence? So that Congress was very important in talking to the world that the Arabs were ready for independence, and we don't want to be under the mandate or the control or colonial or imperialism or occupation or any form of foreign control over our land. And hence came the Congress in May 1920. And also came the Constitution. It was a very progressive constitution that wrote the shape and form of that political entity. And it was constitutional monarchy. It was a place of equal rights between all its citizens, regardless of their faith or ethnicity. There are equal rights regardless of whatever minority or majority, whatever sect, whatever religion or no religion you have in that kingdom. By the way, I encourage you to look up the constitution of the Kingdom of Arab Syria. And on this point, and back to the American inquiry, the findings of that inquiry remained secret until it was disclosed in 1922. Where they traveled across Palestine and the Syrian region, and they had received something like 300,000 signatories and more than 13,000 petitions. And all the majority of people spoke clearly about their aspiration of self-rule and self-determination. But it was Britain and France who were not interested in listening to the true voices of the region, because they had plans to colonize, to loot, to steal, to control, to subjugate, and to rule the area as we now know. So Prince Faisal was called the king of the Kingdom of Arab Syria, but his kingdom was short-lived, because soon after, France occupied Syria, and by the 24th of July 1920, this was the beginning of the French mandate over Syria and Lebanon, and soon after, the British mandate of Palestine was also made official. And here I just want to reflect on a few points. First, I want you to know the name of this person, Yusuf Al-Azma, A-L-A-Z-M-A, who was the defense minister of the Kingdom of Arab Syria, was the only member of the cabinet that wanted to fight. Even though that they didn't feel they were ready militarily to confront the French, but he said that I don't want history to record that Syria was occupied unchallenged. So Yusuf Al-Azma, with a brigade from the Syrian army, met the French army in a place called Maysalun, and the Battle of Maysalun, they were obliterated, they were entirely wiped out by the French, and Yusuf Al-Azma was killed in that battle. So he became an icon of steadfastness and resistance. There is a street in Amman named after, in Amman, Jordan. There is a street in Jordan named after Yusuf Al-Azma. And by the way, this is our street. My parents live on that street. So now you partially know our address in Jordan. So Yusuf Al-Azma is a figure that deserves to be recognized. Soon after the French occupation of Syria, the Syrians, regardless of their faith or ethnicity, resisted the occupation. And there was a grand revolution in 1926 against the French occupation of Syria, to which France responded with sheer violence, including bombardment from the air. So French airplanes destroyed most of Damascus. The destruction of Damascus was a Nakba, not just for Syrians, but for all Arabs. And this black chapter was immortalized in literature by a poem written by the Egyptian poet Ahmed Shawqi, whose other name was Amir al-Shu'ara, the prince of all poets, in a poem called The Nakba of Damascus, Nakbatu Dimashq, in which Ahmed Shawqi made a reference to a music scale in Arabic music called the Saba scale, which is the scale of sadness and melancholy. And he said, "My salam, my greetings to you, O Damascus, is more tender than the Saba of Barada River." And Barada River is one of the rivers of Damascus. Salamun min Saba Barada Raqqu, wa dam'un la yukafkafu ya Dimashqu, damu thuwari ta'rifuhu Faransa, wa ta'lamu annahu nurun wa haqqu, wa lil hurriyatil hamra ibabun, bikulli yadin mudarrajatin yudaqqu. By Ahmed Shawqi, the prince of all poets, mourning Dimashq, Damascus.
Hi, this is Rafif Ziada, and you're listening to 3CR, pro-Palestinian, happily proud radio.
3CR!
I also want to remain in literature and poetry and make a reference to another poem, this time written by a Syrian poet and lawyer who resisted the French occupation of his country, and for that he was imprisoned by the French, and he was sent to an island called Arwad in the Mediterranean. And in that prison, this poet and lawyer wrote a poem challenging the darkness of the prison. The name of this poet is Najib Ar-Rayes, and his poem was an imaginary dialogue with the darkness of the prison cell. Arabic language is very descriptive, where you can create imaginary dialogue with the sky, the stars, the winds, the river, the waves, and the darkness of your prison. And he said, talking to the darkness of the prison, that you can descend darker on me, for nothing comes after darkness except the dawn of freedom. And soon after he wrote this poem, it became a song. No one knows who composed the poem, but it became a chant of all prisoners in Arab countries against occupation. Whether you are resisting the French occupation in Syria and Lebanon, or the British occupation of Iraq and Palestine and Jordan and Egypt, or the Italian occupation in Libya, or the French occupation of Algeria and Tunisia, Ya Zalam Asijni Khayyim was the chant. Fast forward to the 70s, this chant was reproduced by a Palestinian music band in Syria called Al-Ashiqin Band, under the leadership of the Palestinian composer Hussein Nazik. and they reproduced this song, and it was made for a television series called With My Own Eyes, بأمي عيني, based on a book written by Felicia Langer, a Jewish Israeli lawyer, a Holocaust survivor, originally from Poland, who in the late 60s and early 70s single-handedly took the Israeli police and army to the Supreme Court in Israel over crimes against Palestinian prisoners. Despite intimidation, despite death threats, she continued representing the Palestinian prisoners in Israeli courts. And in the 70s, she wrote a book published in Hebrew and in German, and later in English, called With My Own Eyes, based on her journey with the Palestinian prisoners and based on the crimes that she had witnessed at the hands of Israel. That book was translated into Arabic by PLO. That book was made a television production by Syrian actors and actresses, including the beautiful actress Muna Wasif. And it showed the Arab viewers, millions of Arab viewers, the findings of Felicia Langer's book and the crimes committed against the Palestinians in Israeli jails. The music of that television series was made by Hussein Nazik and Al-Ashiqin Band. With our poem, Ya Zalam Al-Sijn, the darkness of the prison became the theme song of the television series. And here in Melbourne, in August this year, Tarab Ensemble, in collaboration with the Victorian Trade Union Choir, under the leadership of Michael Roper, we presented this song for the first time in Australia. So what we did is we reflected the spirit of the song with the choir in Arabic language with the first two lines, and we allowed room for improvisation on double bass by my colleague in Tarab Ensemble, Michael Curry. And we also created a space for voice-over poetry recital of Mahmoud Darwish poetry in Arabic, which I read myself. By the way, you can purchase tickets to Tarab Ensemble's upcoming concerts on the 25th of this month. We are performing at Melbourne Recital Centre's Salon the 25th of October. You can purchase tickets if you look up the following: Tarab Ensemble, T-A-R-A-B Ensemble. The name of the concert is Melodies of the Vast Minority. So until the end of this episode, I'll leave you with this collaboration, Tarab Ensemble and the Victorian Trade Union Choir performing the prisoner's song. And until we meet next week, this is Yusuf Ahmed Rimawi wishing you the best of times and salam.
مساء صغير على قرية مهملة وعينان نائمتان مساء صغير على قرية مهملة وعينان نائمتان أعود 30 عاماً وخمس حروب وأشهد أن الزمان يخبئ لي سنبلة يغني المغني عن النار والغرباء وكان المساء مساء وكان المغني يغني ويستجوبونه لماذا تغني يرد عليهم لأني أغني وقد فتشوا صدره فلم يجدوا غير قلبه وقد فتشوا قلبه فلم يجدوا غير شعبه وقد فتشوا صوته فلم يجدوا غير حزنه وقد فتشوا حزنه فلم يجدوا غير سجنه وقد فتشوا سجنه فلم يجدوا غيرهم في القيود
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.